Are you looking for new books to read? Do you like finding a new special author? Are you tired of the same old books from the same old authors? Well then, welcome to Discovered Wordsmiths, a podcast where you can hear from fantastic new authors. Join Stephen Schneider as he finds and talks to authors you may not know, but authors that have worked hard to write great new books. Hear about their book and why you should check it out. So sit back and listen to today's Discovered Wordsmith.
Let's talk some author stuff, because we were talking about your new book, but you've actually written and have several different things out. So you've got some experience under your belt.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some things that you've learned from the past that you're doing differently now?
Well, one thing is I learned a few years ago that if you want to write a novel and you keep procrastinating, do NaNoWriMo or CamPRIMO, which is how I do all of my books now. I only write a novel twice a year in April or November. I don't know if you're familiar. Are you familiar with NaNoWriMo?
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of people talk about that, doing that to get them kickstarted.
Yeah, it's great. It's and I don't do the community stuff. That's not how I write. I don't have a group of people that I work with, critique group or anything like that. That's not my style. But it forces me to have an outline ready to go. So I do that. I do an outline, and then I work. The way I write is I write inside my outline. Like, I save my outline as an outline, and then I also save it as first draft. And it's the same exact thing until I start writing the first draft, and then I go into it item for item and write that out.
A template.
Yeah, I use it as a template, and I write over it. In edits, I'll find a lot of times where when I wrote the outline, I wrote it in present tense. And when I write the novel, I write it in past tense. And there's some conflict.
Well, it gives you good point of view practice.
Yeah. And that's another thing that it does, too, is it keeps you on your toes what you're writing. But it just makes it so much easier, because there's a word tracker, a word count tracker. And so, you know, how many words you have to hit today. If you didn't hit them today, how many more you have to hit tomorrow to get back on track. And you want to try to stay on track, and you want to try to keep this line going straight. And, so that's my biggest thing that I learned, was to use NaNoWriMo. But there's also now on Story Origin, there's a similar thing that's a goal tracker. And if you use Story Origin, then you can use their goal tracker. But for me, I wouldn't recommend that for me, and probably for other people who are like me, because there's no time limit that way, except for what you set yourself. Whereas the month of November ends on the 30th, and that's it. It's over.
Right. So how did you get into writing that way? I know a lot of people use NaNoWriMo to get a first draft. It's kind of that push, but they do the community thing. So how did you get into, hey, I'm going to write this book, but I'm just going to do it because everybody else talks about it, essentially?
Yeah.
What got you going that way?
Well, like I said, the first novel that I wrote in the other segment, I wrote my first novel when I was in high school. And that was just something I did throughout my senior year. I just wrote it here and there. And I actually included things that happened that year in the novel. So it was just like, that was how I wrote that one. It just took me forever to write it. I got it in my head that it takes forever to write a novel because I did that. So when I wrote my science fiction novel that is traditionally published, when I wrote that, it was, again, I just wrote it as ideas came to me, and in spare time at work, I would write it in pencil, and then I ended up typing it all out and everything. And that was all taking forever. And then word processing came along, and I had an idea for a mystery novel that I wanted to write. And so I sat down and started writing that in the word processor. And I was finding it a lot easier to write in the word processor, because I was able to move things around and put this quote over here and that quote over there. And I should have said this. I can put that in. I forgot. I don't have to tear up the sheet and write it all over again. So that got me to where I was enjoying writing, more quickly. I was able to write more quickly and tell the same story. And then I wrote a second novel the same way. And I hadn't published either one of these mystery novels yet, but I wrote the first novel, and I wrote the second, and I had written the second novel, and I was working on the third novel, and I had a catastrophic, the blue screen of death came up in the middle of writing the third novel. And so I was able to salvage the first novel, but I wasn't able to salvage the second novel. So I thought, well, I'm going to have to rewrite this thing someday. And I just don't feel like doing that. And then I heard about NaNoWriMo. And so I rewrote the novel that I had lost in the NaNoWriMo. And that worked brilliantly. So.
Nice. And I like that because a lot of times people like, oh, I need to write this way. And oh, now I need to write this way because someone else told me, so, you know, they bounce around, they mm-hmm. try things. It's always good to hear something different. So it's like, oh, the way I'm doing it worked for me. And if that's what it takes to write, you know, then just go with it.
Yeah. There's different, everybody can have a different technique. Nobody has to write the same way as somebody else. But if you find something in something that somebody else did that you think will work for you, then that's good to hear.
Yeah. That's what I usually, you know, listen to any advice and maybe try it. But sometimes you have to take a piece here and a piece there and a piece here and get your own method and way of doing it.
A few years ago, every podcast that I was listening to was talking about standing desks. And, yes. I was like, I am never doing that.
Yeah. I understand why they can be good, but I just can't. I'm a computer programmer too. Mm-hmm. So I just can't stand and do that.
Yeah. My son has a standing desk and he loves it, but I am never using it.
Yeah, well, we're just old. So.
Yeah, we're old.
Yeah. So you mentioned Story Origin. What all software and services do you use to write besides NaNoWriMo and Story Origin?
That's it. I use Microsoft Word for everything. I format my novels in Microsoft Word. Like, there's people that want to use Vellum, and there's people that want to use Scrivener, and those are, I'm sure, perfectly good tools, but I learned how to do it in Microsoft Word. I forced myself to learn all the hard things in Microsoft Word, and now that I know them, I don't want to learn something else. So
yeah, well, you know, I use Scrivener. It fits my brain. Mm-hmm. I started with Word, but then when I discovered Scrivener, I went, "Oh, this is it exactly." It fit me perfectly. Mm-hmm. But I know a lot of people that don't like it. Again, use what works for you. Yeah. I mean, people used to write on yellow legal pads with a pencil, so and then type it on a typewriter. So I don't think people need to get so uptight about what they use.
Right. I record my own novels when I do audiobooks too. And when I record, when I record them, I use Audacity, which is not, that's like the, it's the simplest, cheapest, freest thing you can get. And then I do my own covers and I use GIMP, which is like free Photoshop. So so I'm not paying for anything I don't have to pay for.
And and I use both of those also. I don't do most graphics, but I've got GIMP because it's got the most power if I need something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I don't usually, cause I'm not that artistic. So you used to do a podcast, you said.
Yeah.
What was that? Tell us about that.
Wait, that was called the Thrills and Mystery Podcast, and I did it for a few years through Libsyn, Liberated Syndication. Uh-huh. I don't know if you use Libsyn or not. So what I did was with that podcast is I would write short crime stories and narrate them, but I also asked other authors, and I named it Thrills and Mystery, but I made sure other authors understood thrills means whatever it means. It doesn't necessarily mean thrillers, what we imagine as a thriller, James Bond type of story. It can be a spy novel, or it can be a seafaring adventure, or it can be a romantic a fairy tale story or something like that. Right. If it's thrilling, it's thrilling. So I was able to get other authors to submit stories to me that were their short pieces. And I would narrate them like I was doing an audiobook. And I would do 18 episodes a season of that. And then in between seasons, I did interviews like what we're doing today. I would contact the same authors and ask them if they wanted to do an interview. And some of them did and some of them didn't. So then I would fill the rest of it with authors who I hadn't read any of their stuff. And I had one author who every Halloween, we talked about what he was currently working on. We did an interview every Halloween.
Nice. So what made you decide to do a podcast like that?
I wanted to do something. Whenever you're an author, you rely on other authors to help you in some way. If you're doing newsletter shares, that's one way. If you're doing critique group, which I don't do, but if you're doing critique group, you know you're helping each other that way. There's all kinds of different ways where you rely on other authors to help you, and so I wanted to do something to give back, basically. But I also wanted it to be something that I could self-promote with. So that turned out, and podcasting was really popular. It was basically a new thing, and everybody was trying their hand at it. And at the time, there was a podcast that was available out that was called Crime Wave, WAV. And the author who did Crime Wave had stopped doing it, because I tried to submit something to him and he had stopped doing it. So I thought, I'll just pick up where he left off. And that's how that came about.
Nice. And I kind of the same thing. Podcasting allows me to give back. Other authors, you know, getting the word out for them and starting to get a community of authors that I know, and finding some good books and helping others find good books and authors to find an audience. You know, it's that everybody wins situation. So right. Yeah, I totally like that. I like that you had reading a short story or something. There's not as many of those. There's a lot of interview podcasts. I mean, this has that, but I've started doing the reading a chapter short story type thing too, added that on for authors. Kind of the one-stop shop thinking.
Yeah, yeah. I like the whole reading a chapter thing or reading a short story thing because it gives the author an opportunity. A lot of authors don't want to read their own too. So that's why I did So that's why I read them for them. And it also gave them an idea of what handing over that control if they ever decided they wanted to do an audiobook, what that felt like. So there was that aspect of it. But reading the short story, it lets the audience know, you know, okay, I enjoyed listening to this person talk and I enjoyed what they had to say, but I don't know that I want to read their story. But so if you hear a piece of the story and it gets you hooked, then that's a way of, you know, bringing them into the story, letting them know that it's okay to get that story.
And I think Joanna Penn just had on her podcast a while back, somebody that does the same thing, but for poetry. He reads poetry and then interviews the author.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting because I know poetry isn't as popular, but he made it sound pretty exciting.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I used to write poetry, just on my own. I never intended to publish any of it, but writing poetry is a completely different discipline than writing a story. And the allegory aspect of it is stronger. You know, you want to have a theme in your story, but you don't need to have allegories necessarily when you're writing a novel, but you have to have allegory when you're writing poetry.
And there's a lot of different styles and formats to poetry, which I never really thought about. I mean, I understand there are, like stories. So it's definitely a niche that I'm sure somebody wanted to listen to. I think it's great, but I don't really get into poetry. So that's a good thing about podcasting. There's something for everybody.
Right. Yeah. I enjoy some poetry. I like slam poetry. I like ballads. I like sonnets. I love limericks, but a lot of the freestyle poetry, I just don't understand it. It just doesn't.
Most of my poetry go with three chords and some rock jams.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah.
You know, that's what I like. So what are some other podcasts that you like to listen to?
Well, right now, the only other podcast I'm still listening to is the Sell More Books Show. But before that, I was listening to Joanna Penn's podcast. I was listening to, I can't remember what they called themselves, but it was Dave and
Johnny. And,
Johnny and,
yeah. I forget. It's Story Studio now, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah, I gave up on that one because it kind of just, it was really good at the beginning. And it's still probably, I'm sure it's a great podcast for those people who like it. I'm not knocking the podcast. But for me, it got away from what I was listening to the podcast for. And the same with Joanna Penn. She kind of got away with, she was talking more about like keeping yourself healthy and stuff like that, which I want to know about bullshit. And
I also think, you know, after a while you get some of the information and you don't need it again.
Right.
And you start running out. Cause two of the guys I like, Jay Thorne and Zach Bohannon, they had the Career Author podcast, mm-hmm. and they hit like 150 episodes. They said, what else are we going to say that we haven't already said? And mm-hmm. so they kind of quit doing it, but they're doing other things.
Right.
And like this podcast, if you're not looking for a new book and you are a new author, you know, that was my goal, is to be an inspiration for new authors mm-hmm. and to help new authors get their book out. But if you've written four or five books, you've gotten some acclaim out there, this probably isn't the podcast you're going to turn to anymore because you already know what new authors are talking about.
Right. Well, one of the reasons I quit my podcast is because I was getting more and more difficult to find authors who would submit their stories for the podcast. It was getting harder and harder to do it. And I understood that. And the ones who did submit their stories were great about it. They were all fantastic about it, but several of them gave me several stories to use, but pretty soon you run out of stuff to give away. You know, you gotta sell something.
right. Yeah. Okay. Well, Dave, it's been a great conversation, podcasting. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, we were going to talk about my, discovery tool, but we didn't get around to that.
No, let's do it. We got time. People will listen. So tell me about that.
Okay. So I have this idea that, and I would love to hear back for anybody who thinks it's a good enough idea to run with, because I would need other people involved with it. But the idea is I wanted to create a discoverability engine, and the way that it would work, and everything is out there for it. And I've mentioned this in other forums and things in the past, but the way that it would work is if you've ever used Pandora, for music searches, and you say, okay, can you find me songs that are like this song? And then it finds you other songs that are like that. It's using something that's called the music genome. And right. And there was a project that put together so it says, okay, this music uses a lot of strings, or it doesn't use a lot of strings, or it has syncopation, or it doesn't have syncopation. It uses all the different qualities of a song, and then finds other songs that are like it. And then there's also Netflix, where when you sign up to Netflix, it says, have you seen, tell us what movies you've seen and rate them. And then they give you a whole list of movies and you rate them. And then it says, okay, based on that, we recommend this for you.
Right.
Okay. Well, there's actually something out there called the Book Genome Project. I don't know if you've ever heard of it or not. But,
no, I haven't.
But what they did was, it was a university project, and they took all the different qualities that you would find in a book, and it created an AI that just looks at a manuscript and picks out how many action words there are, how often you use he said, she said, you know, all these different characteristics that would be in the book. And it says, okay, so it creates a genome for that book. And then it compares it to other books in the catalog and says, so you're like this, like this, like this. And there are people who use it, but what they'll do is they'll submit their manuscript to it, and their manuscript will come back and it'll say, you write like this person, this person, and this person. So then when you're marketing, you can market to people who like those writers, which is all great. But what nobody's doing with it, and which I think they could do, is a Netflix type thing where you go and you say, okay, I've read this novel and I gave it a 9. I read this novel, I gave it a 7. I read this novel, I gave it a 3. And it says, okay, so this is what you like based on your profile. We recommend these books. And as an author, what you would do is you would submit your book to have your genome tested. And then you would be in there, and the algorithm would spit out your book to people who are already predisposed to like your type of book.
Nice. And I love that, because I talked to somebody a while back. I said, well, there's a lot of things I've been hearing, genre, that if you start writing a werewolf novel, people are going to expect you to write werewolf novels, and you should write the next book as a werewolf novel and keep writing all these werewolf novels. Mm-hmm. And I've pushed back against that, and I've argued with other authors about it. But, you know, studies and numbers have shown readers will get your book and then they'll get all your books and expect them to be similar. And when you jump around, you lose readers. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I can understand that. You know, they do have years and numbers to show that. I get it. But I'm not that type of reader. I read, you know, I've got Ray Bradbury, I've had Isaac Asimov, Robert Parker, Spencer series. Mm-hmm. You know, I read all over the board. So I'm not that type. But you mentioned Netflix, and I'm like, I think genre needs to kind of start going away. Amazon has already started that in a way, because they just keep adding more and more and more and more and more subgenres.
Right.
You know, it's
steampunk. The BISAC used to be like this, and now it's like this.
Yeah. Yeah. It just keeps growing to try and accommodate all that. And I said, but Netflix has the right system where they have tags. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, I mostly like dark. So if something is tagged dark and that's like its biggest tag, I'll probably like it. Mm-hmm. If it's dark, set in the South, well, I'm going to like that too. So you find the Venn diagram cross things that match up. And I'm like, that's what we really need to get to more, is what things are, you know, tagged, and that, which is exactly what sounds like this Genome Project does.
Right. Yeah. The Genome Project is already an existing thing, and it's open source. The Netflix algorithm for search is also open source. I don't know if you know that or not, the way that they got their algorithm was they had an algorithm that wasn't working very well. So they had a contest and they said, fix our algorithm. So it became, it's an open source algorithm. So you can actually tweak the algorithm to make it for books instead of for movies. So everything that you would need to create this, and I'm not a programmer, so I can't do it. But and I'm not even saying that I want to do this for profit. That this, I want this to exist. I want this tool to exist for me to use. And everything's out there for it. Nobody's doing it.
Well, I'm going to have to bring that up, and we'll push it around. I like the idea because it fits right with the thinking I had. Mm-hmm. You know, I told a few authors about the tag thing, and the one guy said, "Well, you're just, you know, pushing that rock up a very steep hill. Mm-hmm. You're going to fight every step of the way. It's probably not worth it." And I'm like, well, maybe not. But I also write middle grade. Mm-hmm. And I think middle grade kids are fairly open and bounce around. I mean, when you say middle grade, I write middle grade, well, that's not really a genre. That's a demographic.
Right. That's always a demographic. You know, exactly. Got me.
Yeah. You know, when I was in middle grade, I liked fantasy, Alexander, the Book of Three and stuff like that. I had other people that liked something completely different. You know, some of them maybe even liked Harper Lee, that we were forced to read.
Right.
And now kids read Dork Diaries.
S.E. Hinton's a popular one. That's also not at all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the middle grade is not a genre. There's genres within middle grade. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, younger kids can bounce around and do that until they discover what they like.
Right.
So I think a lot of people nowadays are starting to do that even more. I think Amazon actually does help with that. Oh, if you like this, then you'll like this. And it's not always the same genre. It's similar something.
Right. Now there's a story origin, for example. If somebody was to create this and then incorporate it into story origin, so that readers could do that, you know, find it like that. The tool itself, if the tool existed, it could be used by so many different people in so many different ways. Amazon could use it. Barnes and Noble could use it. Google could use it. If everybody had access to it. Because I'm thinking like a Linux thing where we just create it and say, please use this. And then and it doesn't matter if you're doing it through, you know, Kobo. It doesn't matter if you're doing it through, you know, through Facebook. you know, just however you're getting to it, it's going to help the author community because they're going to be able to get their books recommended to people who would never find them otherwise.
Yeah, I agree. Of course, that does bring up a whole new problem. I don't really need more books added to my to-read list. I keep adding more. That causes issues.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the thing with Kindle. The danger is, you know, when I had a bookshelf full of books, I could see, okay, I've got like 100 books. I better start reading a little more. Or, oh, I've already got enough fantasy right now. You know, I need some more sci-fi, or I feel like sci-fi or whatever. But when it's on Kindle, I could have 3,000 books and I pick up, it weighs the same. It takes up the same space. So, oh, heck, I'll just add 10 more. It's not a problem.
Yeah, I've got all kinds of stuff on my Kindle too. I also have that same exact problem with my Chirp account. I don't know if you know what Chirp is, but it's audiobooks.
Yes.
Yeah. And Chirp makes it so easy. They send you an email every day.
That was great. Audiobooks and podcasts and things when I was taking kids to school, taking kids to work. And then I got remarried and had stepkids and I was running kids all over the place. You know, as they got to adults, for some reason, this generation doesn't want to drive. I don't know what that is, but okay. But I was driving people all over the place and I had tons of podcasts, tons of audiobooks. Well, now I don't do that. Mm-hmm. So I'm so far behind on audiobooks and podcasts. Yeah. I used to, there's a thing I get on Tuesday called Audiobook Boom.
Yeah. Actually, I got that one too. Yeah.
Yeah, so I've got a lot of books from that, but I realized, I've got like 10 books I haven't listened to and reviewed yet. I better stop because it's not fair to just keep getting all
these
books.
Yeah, that's what I used to. Yeah, I was reviewing ebooks for a while, and then I decided I'm just going to do audiobooks. I want to review audiobooks, and I was using Audiobook Boom for that, and I started getting behind on that, and I'm like, I can't do it. I can't write reviews anymore because I'm not being fair to the people who are asking me to review them.
Yeah, I agree. I still keep an eye on it. Every now and then I'll see an author I do like. I'll get their book and I will review theirs because I'll listen to it quicker. Mm-hmm. Or if something looks super interesting or another podcast guest mentioned it, I'll get. And that's really kind of this discoverability engine. They say the best way to sell your book is A, come out with another book in the series, or B, have somebody tell somebody about your book.
Right.
And that's what this discoverability engine really does.
Yeah, it's a machine telling other people about your book based on what they know you like. So, and they know you better than your uncle who says, you know who you would like? And you're like, no, I would not.
right. Yeah. Agreed. Well, you know what? I'm going to have to look into this a bit more. I did not know about the Book Genome project and have to take a look at it. And who knows? Maybe I'll run into some more authors and maybe we'll get something going on that. That'd be great. Yes.
No, I was just going to say thanks again for having me on. I appreciate it. And hopefully, you know, a few people out there want to read the book now. So
I hope so. Before we go, Dave, do you have any last minute advice you would give new authors?
Okay. New authors, last minute advice. Yes. My advice to anybody wanting to write a book, and I've given this advice to everybody who's ever said to me, I want to write a book, but I don't know. Don't worry what it's like. Don't worry that it's good. It doesn't have to be good. You don't have to write a good book the first time you write a book. You just have to write the book so that you know that you did it. And then once you know that you did it and that you can do it, the next time you have an idea for a story, you'll want to write it. It gets to the point where you start getting ideas for stories that live in your head forever because you can't get to it because you're writing so many other things. So.
Yeah. Right. That's the good problem to get to. Mm-hmm. You forget what the problem is of even starting once you've written and keep writing.
Right.
I agree. All right. Well, Dave, it's been a fun talk. I appreciate it. Thank you for being on.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Discovered Wordsmiths. Come back next week and listen to another author discuss the road they've traveled, and maybe sometime in the near future, it might be you.